Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungry here on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. I'm your host, Fred. No Tyler this week. He is off in vacation land enjoying a beverage in Mexico. So I'm just going to go over the big news, and I guess the biggest story, as silly as, I don't know, I will be cursed to talk about CM Punk until I die, I think, at this point. I've done this to myself. I have no one to blame but myself. And that's really unfortunate because I'm the idiot that could get myself out of this mess. Anyways, if you enjoyed this podcast, you know, there should be a link to redcircle.com where you can give us money to sponsor the podcast. You can also subscribe on your chosen pod downloader of choice. You know, tell your friends about us, give us a good review, all that good stuff. Make us feel better about ourselves. All right, so the Nemeth lawsuit. Now, I am going to say, it's important to note, I am not a lawyer. I'm not going to even pretend I am. I do occasionally read lawsuits if they are on a subject that interests me. I read some or listen to some legal analysis on occasion. Again, if the subject interests me, I am far from any kind of education. So let's talk about this Ryan Nemeth lawsuit. Lawsuit states that Ryan Nemeth signed an exclusive pay-per-appearance contract for the period of March 1st, 2023 to February 29th, Leap Day 2024. He was not able to wrestle anywhere else, and for his cage match, he doesn't wrestle anywhere else. Now, Nemeth told AEW executives on April 16th of 2023 he was concerned Punk would assault him after his, that is, Punk's initial suspension after Brawl Out with Young Bucks. There is then an incident between Punk and Nemeth where Punk confronted Nemeth in a locker room and essentially challenged him to a fight. Now, Nemeth refers to this as an assault, but doesn't make any accusations of physical contact. So, just to note that. This occurred on June 21st, 2023. There's also the incident where Nemeth was ejected from the Greensboro Arena on August 12th, 2023, after being booked for that show, which he blames on CM Punk because he saw CM Punk texting immediately after seeing him. A couple other things I'm going to mention from just before I get into the real meat and potatoes. Here's a quote from the lawsuit. Again, Nemeth's allegations. In a bizarre email, AEW attorney Chris Peck reached out and threatened legal action against Nemeth and accused him of employing a ghostwriter in his emails. This is kind of a weird thing to say. And I think this paragraph is pretty indicative of Nemeth's claims. The defendants have embarked upon a campaign to blackball Ryan Nemeth from professional wrestling. Specifically, Tony Khan blames Nemeth for Brooks. It's Punk, of course. Leaving AEW, and he's used his significant resources to make sure that Nemeth can never again make a living in wrestling. Now, I can say that Nemeth's last, you know, I'll go through a whole timeline here, so we'll get to that in a second. Nemeth has basically four big claims. One is claiming that certain people, including CM Punk, caused harm via their actions. Two, He claims breach of contract by AEW due to failing to schedule Nemeth for matches, failing to protect Nemeth from harm from other employees, and he states that he includes both himself and Brooks as employees. Now, I do believe we have talked about how Punk was an employee. I think that came out eventually rather than an independent contractor. I would be surprised if Nemeth was made an employee and not a contractor, but I don't know. So, just a thing to keep an eye out for there. And also, another claim, part of that claim is obstructing Nemeth from participating in matches. And building off of that, in a separate claim, AEW and Tony Khan did not act fairly and in good faith with Ryan Nemeth. And finally, AEW intentionally disrupted Nemeth's relationship with other companies. I feel like that one was a little underexplained, but maybe I just missed something. Okay, so let's just go over some important dates for this whole situation. First of all, now that's not, I made an error here. Give me a second. Okay, now that my cat has no longer taken over my laptop from me. All right, so important dates. Punk returned on June 17th, 2023 from his first suspension. That night, per two screen caps I found, but there's a third that puts on the next day of June 18th for some reason, Nemeth had his kind of infamous, literally the softest man alive tweet. He later tried to claim after the fact that that was all in character. I don't know. And then Punk was fired by AEW with AEW claiming it was for cause on September 2nd, 2023. That was, of course, after the... Well, and Nemeth's last AEW match was November 4th, 2023. Though for some reason, the lawsuit states November 18th, 2024. But he was well into his TNA run by that point. In fact, his first match in TNA would have been, I have here, May 4th, 2024. So that's 6 months between leaving AEW and starting with TNA, at least in ring. That also excludes a January 2024 Puerto Rico match with WWC. Okay. And, of course, Punk returned to WWE on screen at Survivor Series 2023 on November 25th. Okay, so I think there's a little bit of interest, a little bit of meat here in some of the claims. I think would be interesting to see how they work out. I think the claims of harm against Punk and various John Does be interesting to watch. I think that might have enough merit to go to trial. I don't know about the contract stuff with AEW. I'm not sure. Now I think that there could be some stuff with could be some stuff with not being used retaliation, maybe that would get some legs. And the whole you suspended CM Punk after the first fight thing. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he can get some juice off that too. You know, the fact that he returned and started stuff with Nemeth right away. Now, I do think there's some stuff in this lawsuit that I... again, I'll reiterate my own lack of experience in this, this not being my background, not being a source of training for me, but there's some stuff in here that seems unusual in terms of the usual very kind of legally professional, for lack of a better term, way of laying out lawsuits. And there's a couple of things that I'll go over. And again, I don't know that this will actually have any meaning or any effect on the lawsuit. I just thought these were interesting. There's an unflattering screen cap of Tony Khan appearing on the NFL Network when he was working the, you know, in the aftermath of the Meltzer driver angle where he had the neck brace on and was clearly just kind of having fun with it. I think, you know, you do see like screenshots and stuff in legal filings, but they're usually presenting evidence. I have never seen a lawsuit state like, person X is da 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 with in the state of blah blah and all this, you know, nothing like that. I just don't, you know, but okay, what I'm trying to say, I'm doing terrible at it, I apologize. But what I'm trying to say is that typically when you see that, you don't then see a picture of the person being identified. And they don't put a picture in of either Punk or Nemeth, but they put one in of Tony Khan kind of doing a little bit of a, you know, goofy pro wrestling thing. I thought that was a little weird. Another aspect of it I thought was a little odd. Was getting some dates wrong. He got the whole brawl out thing, the date for that, wrong by several months. He mentions that he talked with Tony Schiavone on June 22nd and then said he was making complaints again on June 17th. So that was a little, does not follow there. One of those dates is in erroneous, I believe. I mean, just assuming that they were referring to each other. Also, when they're identifying Khan, they specifically say that AEW is formed so Tony Khan can stop ruining the Jacksonville Jaguars and Fulham, which is a little absurd because he clearly still works for both of those teams. I don't know what was that the point of that, I guess. And also, twice, I believe, at least once, maybe twice, if I don't have the lawsuit open in front of me right now, outright states that Khan had an obsession with CM Punk. I think that that is a weird choice of word when you're describing how someone views a company's top draw. I just thought some of this phrasing was really weird. Again, not my background. Maybe I'm just haven't seen the right stuff or something, but it seems off kilter, I guess would be a way to put it, compared to other lawsuits. I don't know. Again, I don't know if or how much that would affect any future viewing of that by a judge or jury. Just something I thought I would point out. Now, Meltzer's write-up of this in The Observer was fairly dismissive for the most part. I think most notably this sentence from Meltzer. The wording of the lawsuit is such that some of it reads like a combination of comedy and claiming ridiculous assertions right out of the grifting podcaster playbook. Meltzer's words, fine. It's kind of a weird situation. But we'll see how that goes. I wouldn't expect much to really progress with it for a bit. Now, moving forward, another weird story is that, if you all remember the Shane McMahon meeting that was much ballyhooed a while back and what impact that had, which was seemingly none, there is now a report, I believe, thanks to an interview Jonathan Coachman did, or maybe it was a show, stating that Shane apparently wanted to be brought in to lead AEW's creative and also be given equity in the company. Not be paid a salary, but just outright be given a chunk of the company. And then Tony Khan, in true millennial fashion, ghosted him, apparently. I love how we keep hearing these stories about Tony Khan just leaving people in red. So yeah, I would not have personally, I would not have brought Shane McMahon in to be my head of creative and also give him a part ownership of the company for the privilege. The story like 20 years ago is that he was so bad at creative that Vince wouldn't let him around and touch it. And of course there was the stories coming out of that Royal Rumble he made a return at a couple years ago, and the chaos that got blamed on him with the booking of that. So yeah, anyways, I assume that that puts to bed any possible affiliation there. Moving on, we're getting teasers for Speedball Mike Bailey aired on TV. Be interesting to see when he comes in. There's reports that Josh Alexander is coming in. I just have not seen anything official that way from AEW. And New Japan's Clark Connor says he will be appearing soon on AEW TV. Also, a bunch of CMLL wrestlers are being brought in, I think mainly for Ring of Honor, but also for AEW in the near future. So. Other contract news, Layla Hirsch's contract is actually expiring today per reports and is expected to not be renewed. I liked her when she came in. I'm not going to say that she was like, the best worker in the division or anything. But I do think her knee injury really set her back, and then being demoted to Ring of Honor and just being kind of left to fester there was unfortunate. Did not help her out at all. And I guess, yeah, I never really heard about her having great matches in there. I mean, granted, it's Honor Club, so you don't hear a whole lot about that period. The Righteous shall not include Elias, for he is officially assigned or signed, excuse me, with TNA. That's a weird little story that I think people are going to forget about pretty quickly. But that whole like, let's do a hype video for the guy we haven't signed, then he's going to sign with a smaller company thing. It's going to go down as pretty weird. Oh boy, what's going on there? I don't know. And finally, last note I want to share is Queen of the Ring, the movie about Mildred Burke, is coming out on March 7th, so next weekend. Tony Storm acted in that along with various other professional wrestlers, so that will be interesting to keep an eye on. Okay, I'm gonna let you all in on a little secret, in my opinion, which is that I think AEW Creative has been really good this year. Not perfect, but way better than it was for a while there. And I think this past week of TV has mostly borne that out. Now, granted, I will have to say I did not watch all of Collision, and that's just because of scheduling on my part. Hopefully going to get this back to normal somewhat here in the next week or so, or next few days, I should say. But yeah, what I did watch on Collision, had that nice opening attack by Brian May on Tony Storm. I thought that was a really cool way they did it of just having Tony walking backstage and Brian May brutally attacking her. I thought it was a good angle. And then we had ourselves Hologram and Beast Mortos, and that match was great. I went 4.25 on it. Really good stuff. And then I skipped more or less, although I think there was a Harley Cameron promo I watched after. Yeah, a little Harley Cameron promo. Very good promo, I thought. She's well on her way to being a star. And it's going to be cool to watch. And then after that, I pretty much jumped straight to the main event. Actually, hold on. Was there a trios match? I did not watch the trios match, apparently. Shame on me. I did watch the main event of Bandido challenging Chris Jericho, and Look, I've been very down on Chris Jericho's in-ring work for about a year and a half now or something. Like, I think he's just very close to shot, but this was a good match. I went 3 3/4 on. I wasn't as high on it as other people. Bandido looked really good, and I thought it was a very fun match. Jericho did pretty well in it. So kudos to them for pulling that off and having a nice showing. It was pretty straightforward. There wasn't much to hide, wasn't much smoke or mirror to hide Chris Jericho's flaws behind. So good for him. Good showing. Going on to Dynamite now. We opened with a little MJF promo as he's getting the AEW tattoo removed from his leg. It was a interesting idea. And then Adam Page squashed Aaron Solo, and then MJF diabolically revealed that he had beaten up Christopher Daniels backstage. I think they've done a good job of building this feud. I'm interested in Page versus MJF. Jericho cuts a nice little promo as Brian Keith is hired to take care of the Will Ospreay problem for the Don Callis family. And that was followed by Brian Keith and Will Ospreay. And I gotta say, this was a very good match. Now, it's not gonna be like one of Ospreay's best by the year, end of the year, but it was very good. I went 3 3/4 on it. Just a fun match. A little Momo Watanabe hype video, and then we get a awkward segment backstage where Mercedes Moné is cutting a promo, and Billy Starks walks in. Moné slaps the drink out of her hand and berates her for a while. Takes a little bit before Starks is even identified, and I'm glad they did because I had not seen Billy Starks in a while. And then Watanabe attacks from behind and smacks Moné with a, or tries to smack Moné with a baseball bat, but ducks and leaves her TBS promo or TBS championship god behind. And I gotta say, this we gotta figure out a way for, like, this whole Moné situation with angles is in need of fixing, man, because every single one comes off as like NXT level acting, and it's not good. It's just unfortunate. Outrunner is beat the Murder Machines by a entrance song distraction after the Murder Machines just kill him for a while. If you don't want the Murder Machines to be hurt, don't have them lose. It's like they just didn't want to make the match for whatever reason with the hurts in the kid. And oh man, I don't know. I just think this kind of didn't do anything to really help the Outrunners, and didn't help. They didn't protect the Murder Machines either. I worry that if they keep this kind of stuff up, they're going to hurt the Outrunners, which are, like, I don't think they're great in the ring or anything. I don't think they should have the belts anytime soon. I wouldn't really push for them to have the belts at all. I just don't know that they're at that level of worker. But I just don't think that you should, I think this could have hurt them. And I think that if you have a organically overact like the Outrunners kind of are, you're going to hurt them. Because I think you'll have a hard time rebuilding them. Yeah, I thought that match was a little dire, frankly. I went 1.5 on it. I just thought they were badly out of sync. The match just didn't look good. And just not their best work, frankly. On either side of the ball, if you will. Let's see what else was on the show. Cope cuts a little promo about how he's hunting down I'm sorry, a little recap of how Cope's taking people out. Then Claudio cuts a promo about how he's going to hunt down Cope. We had a promo with Swerve Strickland and Nana and Ricochet, where they set up a match where they will fight on the pay-per-view. Winner gets number one contendership of the championship, of the world championship, I should say. A little promo from MJF on, or I'm sorry, from Adam Page on MJF. I really liked the Ford move on the Ricochet Strickland segment. I thought that was very good. I think that's another feud that they're doing a good job of building. And then we get the Adam Page promo. God, backstage on MJF, threatening to run over MJF again. I think they could have a good match. I'm looking forward to it. Get a really nice trios match next with the Undisputed Kingdom, Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly against FTR and Daniel Garcia. And ended with Cole getting a roll-up on Garcia for the pin, which will set up a TNT title match this Saturday night on Collision. I like this match. I thought it was very good. I ended up going 3 3/4 on it. The Kingdom was acting a little more heelish here, which I liked. I think they will work better as a heel group. I don't need them to go all kind of cartoonishly over the top about it either. We then get a big brouhaha involving the Death Riders, where Claudio is looking for Cope. They brawl to ringside. Yuta shows up with Shafir, and they attack from behind. Jay White comes out to make the save. Moxley comes out, but is held off by Jay White with a chair. So he's not willing to do anything, basically. So Claudio gets a concerto from Cope. Cope? Can't believe it. Stupid name change. And then Willow Nightingale comes out and delivers a concerto to Marina Shafir. My biggest complaint about the Death Riders for the past couple months has been that they've just been booked too dominantly. The baby faces have looked like they had just no hope whatsoever at any point in time. And they've changed that, and that is good. I'm glad that they're giving the baby faces some shine. So I think that they're getting this, I'm not super into the Cope match, but I think it's better than where it was 3 weeks ago. Harley Cameron, Deonna Purrazzo are next. I didn't think this was a great match. I thought this was about bog standard, 2-star level. Cameron continues to look like a future star. I think she's still weakest in the ring. If she can improve on that, I mean, she's young enough where hopefully she's able to. I think she's a slam dunk, future top champion, if she can get to that level in the ring. Willow and Jay White and Adam Copeland watch backstage as Shafir and Claudio are loaded into ambulances. And then we get our main event, which is Orange Cassidy challenging for the AEW International Championship against Konosuke Takeshita. And Takeshita is just so good right now. And Orange is a really good opponent for him because Orange can bump like hell. I mean, he's much smaller than most other guys on top of the card, even in AEW, a smaller promotion. And I think that like Takeshita is just on one right now. He's easily my top wrestler of the year to date from everything I've seen. And I thought this Rock, there was some fun stuff early on with OC's sunglasses, with them being given to Don Callis, who did some aping for the camera with him. And then just, I mean, Cassidy just took some hellacious bumps in this, made all of Takeshita's offense look like a million bucks, and it was great. I thought Orange Cassidy looked really great in this, as the guy is selling. And of course, Takeshita is just a fantastic wrestler, came off awesome. And Takeshita got the win eventually. Cassidy got a really nice Cazador for a near fall and then went for an orange punch, but Takeshita cut him off and hit the Fire Thunder Driver for the win. I thought this was one of the best AEW matches all year. I went 4.5 stars on it. If you said this was their best match this calendar year, I couldn't really argue with you. I mean, the alternatives, I think, are basically Briscoe and Fletcher from earlier this month and the big tag from Collision Grand Slam. Those are the only two from AEW that I'd put on that level. So, and that was the show. I thought it was a really good show. I think AEW has really done a good job of turning around their creative direction, really up and down the card. Everything feels a lot better than it was even just a month ago. And I mean, it's desperately what this promotion needed. It's not a question of the talent in the ring here. It's a question of how they're being used. I think they're doing a lot better job of using that talent than they had previously been. So I think they're heating up this pay-per-view at the right time. I think everything's starting to feel hot, which, I'm not going to say like peak hot AEW, let's be clear, but is it better than it was? Yeah, and yeah, that's good. That's a goal. I like the show. Interested to see where the company goes, and I did not think I'd be into this pay-per-view a month ago. With Adam Copeland and everything, I thought it was kind of concerning. But I think they've done a really great job creatively, and I'm looking forward to the rest of it. And that's the Dynamite review. Just a little short one for y'all. If y'all enjoyed the show, this is on the shorter end, but hey, without I mean, outside of the Nemeth lawsuit, there wasn't a ton to talk about. And, as far as Dynamite, I thought it was a really good show. Thought it was, thought it was fun. So, more of that, please. Hope you all have a great week. Hope you all enjoyed this week's show. And I'll talk to you as my phone continuously buzzes. God bless. Talk to you all next week with Tyler in tow, one hopes. Take care. Have a good one.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.